Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Authors of See You at the Campground, a guide to discovering community, connection, and a happier family in the great outdoors.
10 years ago, we bought a pop-up camper that changed our lives and introduced us to the joys of RV travel.
Join us now as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We'll also keep you dialed in with the latest RV innovations for people in the know.
Pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's very special episode of the RV Atlas. Today, we're back in the saddle with Casita Dean May, who was not on the show for almost a year. And this fall, we have him back on twice in about a month for two really, really awesome episodes. And Dean has been researching the history of the CCC, aka the Civilian Conservation Corps, and the impact they had on the great outdoors, on state parks, on national parks, on so many of our outdoor public spaces. And he's going to tell us about some of that history. And we're going to bring it into the present moment. Because with the recent passing of the Great American Outdoors Act, there has also been a lot of conversation, and I think it's fair to say even somewhat bipartisan conversation about giving birth again to a new CCC, a new Civilian Conservation Corps for the 21st century. Whether that happens or not, we don't know, but it's been in discussion, and it obviously could play a major role on crafting and creating and rebuilding some of the campgrounds that are out there that are really getting kind of old and outdated. But before we dive in to all of Dean's awesome research and this great conversation we're going to have about the CCC, we have a sponsored message from our friends at GoPower. GoPower has been the industry leader for mobile solar systems and solutions since 1996. Their high-quality solar chargers, inverters, controllers, and power accessories offer a durable, dependable, and cost-effective solution for mobile power needs where grid power is inaccessible, unavailable, or unsustainable. GoPower not only makes the best equipment, they offer the best support. Check out their learning center online and you can figure out how much solar you need, what sized inverter to get, and even how to boost your battery health. They've also sold over 1 million solar panels and they've been in business for 25 years. Stephanie and I really feel like they are the brand to trust when it comes to your mobile power needs. To find out more, visit gpelectric.com. Welcome back to the show, Casita Dean May.
Oh, it is nice to be back. And I'm really excited about today's topic.
And we got a lot of nice feedback on the recent episode where you came on and you talked about Southern Indiana as an underrated RV destination. So I wanted you to know that I really think you kind of made a lot of people proud from that state that kind of knew this was a great RV destination and maybe it wasn't getting the attention it deserved. So, you know, kudos to you for that show. Go back and check that out. But today we're talking about the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I know you really dug in and did a lot of research, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this. So give us the historical context for the birth of the Civilian Conservation Corps. When did it get started and why did it get started?
Okay. We're going to go all the way back to the early 1930s and to a certain extent, even the late 1920s with the economic crash. So we're talking about the Great Depression here, and we're going to go all the way into the early 1940s. But, you know, we're really going to talk about that decade of the 1930s. And, you know, we had with the Great Depression, we had an unemployment rate of well over 25%. In 1933, our stocks had lost 89% of their value. So economically, things were in bad shape. We also had some other things that had been going on. You know, we had the Industrial Revolution that started in the 1860s. So there had been decades and decades of growth. But in some ways, with that growth, we were still trying to learn about land management and those types of things. So by the 1930s, we were having problems with our rural and farming landscape. There were, you know, there was lots of soil erosion. You know, we hadn't decades of neglect and abuse of the land. There was timber over harvesting. And even with some of our farming practices, we would plant the same crop over and over again. And then we also in 1932 and 1933 had really, really bad droughts that affected the country. And that was what we would refer to as the Dust Bowl. So what ended up happening because of all these economic problems and issues, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and probably the rest of the way through, I'll just call him FDR, was elected president in 1932. And one of the things that he wanted to do is he wanted to have kind of this New Deal. So this was the New Deal for forgotten, and the quote was for forgotten men, to basically combat the different ravages of the Great Depression. And one of his most popular programs that he implemented was the Civilian Conservation Corps. And the whole idea with the Civilian Conservation Corps is you had all this unemployment. So you had these human resources, but then you also had all these natural resource issues. So the idea behind the CCC was to use human resources to combat and to improve natural resources.
Now, I have to point out the obvious here that you could make the case that we are in a similar situation today, largely due to COVID or mostly due to COVID, in terms of unemployment, in terms of some real struggles that the people are having. And then also simultaneously a real need to invest in some of our public lands and to rebuild a lot of the infrastructure. And of course, we had the passing of that Great American Outdoors Act recently, which is going to address some of that. And it'll get some people working again, but it doesn't address unemployment in a large scale way. But we'll circle back at the end of the show to kind of some more modern touch points. Now, as you're talking about the 30s, Dean, I feel kind of in a weird way at home in that decade because I grew up with my grandfather and he was a child of the 1920s and 30s and he fought in World War II. And I remember him telling me he remembers a brief window of time when every man on his block was unemployed. You know, you had that 25% unemployment rate. He remembers at one point every father being unemployed on his block. And he also remembers making his own shoes out of tires. So that is some of the, you know, the background to that era. So the CCC is born, and you said it was a popular program at the time. Give us an overview of what it was, some of the statistics that can kind of, you know, give us a sense of the size and scope of it.
Okay. So a couple of nicknames for the CCC was the boys of the CCC or Roosevelt's tree army, or some of the CC workers were also referred to as soil soldiers. So they're kind of different nicknames. And I even got on YouTube and listened to some different songs associated with the CCC back in the 1930s. So the CCC was created in 1933. It was actually FDR's executive order in 1932. The CCC continued until 1942. The other thing that's interesting about it was coordinated by three federal level departments. It was coordinated by the Department of Labor, the Department of War, and the Department of Agriculture. And I know this is going to sound weird to all of us. The CCC was created in breakneck speed. It was created in 3 weeks after FDR took office. And it goes to show you that big government can do big things quickly if the problems are big enough. And then once the legislation was put into place, within 5 days after the CCC was created, 25,000 young men had signed up for it.
So what was, what were the ages? What was, give us some detail on the types of men that were, you know, trying to get these jobs.
And again, we're talking about young men here. Primarily 18 to 25 years old. A little later, it was expanded to include 17 to 28 year olds. And again, we're talking about millions of young men across America. The other thing typically associated with this, any of the young men that signed up with it, their families were on relief or what we would call welfare. So, you know, you maybe would have an 18 or 19 year old, and that 18 or 19 year old was typically one of six children. And again, the typical CCC worker would be 18 to 19 years old. About 55% of these young men came from rural areas, but there were still 45% of these young men that came from urban areas. Only 11% had graduated from high school. And another, I think, fascinating statistic here is that 70% of the young men that signed up for this program entered this program malnourished. So again, we're talking about the 1930s here. We're talking about a time in our history in which there was not enough food for people to eat because they didn't have the money to buy the food. And there was a lot of manual labor associated with this, yet the average CCC worker would gain 8 to 14 pounds while they were in the CCC because they were able to have access to three meals a day.
And in a sense, they become the breadwinners for their families. I mean, if they're getting these jobs because the father was unemployed, I imagine a lot of that money that they're making is getting shipped right home.
Yep. Yes. In fact, you know, they were paid $30 a month, and of the $30 per month, 25 of it was sent back home to their families, and they only kept $5 per month to sort of take care of their incidental expenses.
All right. So tell us about some of the long-term benefits for the CC worker and any other reasons why a young men would have really wanted these jobs at this time.
Well, and again, we're just talking about how they were malnourished. So they had those initial benefits of sort of three hots and a cot. So they got three meals a day. Their housing was provided. Their health care was provided. And even their clothing was provided. And again, their clothing was basically denim work clothes. And there was a bit of a military aspect to the Civilian Conservation Corps as well. So maybe on the weekends, if they were going to get dressed in their fancy clothes, they would wear their more military uniforms, but their military uniforms were actually surplus uniforms from World War I.
Now, it sounds like maybe one of the ironies of the program is that in a way, it was preparing some of these young men to go into war. That, of course, they didn't know that in the early 1930s, but it was kind of creating this professionalized, skilled workforce, and I imagine a lot of the things they learned transferred into their experience going into the military. I mean, it seems like it almost could have worked in lockstep for a young man being in the CCC in the 30s and then fighting in World War II in the 40s.
Right. You know, and again, if you think about it, you know, 45% of these young men came from urban areas, and they were roaming the streets. They were unemployed. They were hungry. There was nothing for them to do from a social fabric standpoint. That is not a good formula. So really what this program did is it was able to not just provide them with those, you know, three hots and a cot, but it also helped promote hope, a strong work ethic. It promoted civic engagement, some moral education, and the whole idea of an independent mind. So many of these guys, you'd sign up for 6 months, but they would stay longer than 6 months, with many of them, you know, continuing to sign up and have maybe a couple of years in the CCC. And some of the men were actually in it for 5, 6, 7 years.
And education was promoted too. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, there was also this whole component where they were learning a lot of different skills.
Right. So they spent their days working, typically 5 days a week, perhaps, you know, six, but they still had their evenings and weekends. So again, we're talking about a fairly uneducated population here that worked in the CCC. So they were able to learn to read and write. So they were able to complete their high school diploma. They were able to take training courses in the evenings and weekends related to woodworking or mechanics, electricity, cooking, and radio. I thought something else that was interesting is they used shortwave radio to connect one CCC camp with the other. So that was kind of another hobby or another little technical thing that these workers could be exposed to.
Go ahead.
So this whole overall milieu of not just work to promote character, but also education and training, and so that they could develop social skills and self-reliance.
Now, that's some of the sort of the broad vision of the program. Give us the nitty gritty, like what was a day like working? And I want to remind our listeners, why are we covering this topic? Because the work they were doing was so involved in so many of the public lands that we enjoy today. So what was a day of work like for a young man in the CCC?
Well, it would start at 6 o'clock in the morning with reveille, and then there would be roll call, and then they would do calisthenics, and then they would do breakfast, and all of that would be done so that so they'd be ready to work by 8 o'clock. And that was pretty much the model, again, of a bit of a military model. As we got closer to World War II, it became even a little bit more of a military training. But it definitely had a very structured activity. And again, most of the time, the guys were working 5 days a week. Perhaps if they got rain in the week or whatever, they might have to make up a little bit and work on Saturdays. They rarely would work on Sundays, but still, even with all of the hard manual labor, they did have time in the evenings and weekends to do some of these other activities that we're talking about.
Now, even as these young men would have ended up in World War II, I mean, there wasn't as much free time or time for activities once, some of these men became soldiers. But I read an incredible book called When Books Went to War, and it was about the efforts on behalf of a wide variety of people in the United States to get literature into the hands of soldiers overseas. And they felt like that was a way to combat tyranny, was through reading and education and broadening the scopes of their minds and their educations. So anything else we need to know about daily life was like for them? Or do you want to talk about what the camps were like?
Well, I think, Bob, I like what you were saying there, because I think the same thing applied to these, and as it turned out, millions of young men that served in this project. Is it wasn't just about work and completing projects and building character from the work itself. It was those other activities. I mean, they had these CCC camps, but they had orchestras, they had bands, they had sporting teams. There would be opportunities. They would have tents in which they could have a small library. So they had access to books and arts and crafts and musical performances. And I was even noticed that some of the musical performances, they would occasionally have dances that would include young ladies from the surrounding community, which I think from time to time caused some concern on the part of the communities. But there was a lot of exposure to life in general for these CCC workers other than just manual labor.
Now, it does almost start to sound a little utopian, but the story is, of course, not that simple. We are talking about America in the 1930s. So this is not all a completely happy story. What was maybe some of the problems that we might consider problems looking back on it today, for sure?
Well, I think, there were minority camps, for example. We're talking about a time here in which we still had, pervasive segregation. This was before Brown versus Board in 1954 in terms of the Supreme Court case dealing with, the topics of race. So there were African-American CCC camps, but you would have to have permission from the local community to have those. And again, African Americans were not allowed to work in camps of white workers. And the same thing applied to Native Americans. For Native Americans, they couldn't work in camps other than on reservation. So it's we're talking about young men here. We're not talking about young women. So the things that happened in the 1930s is, definitely different. As we talk about a CCC in the 21st century, it would obviously and hopefully look much different than what we had in the 1930s.
After you mentioned wanting to do this as a topic, I saw a couple articles about it, and I sent you the link to one, and it was sort of envisioned envisioning a modern CCC, and that was certainly like one of the first things they addressed, that this would be more diverse and more representative of America as a whole. And of course, that would be to everyone's benefit. So we're going to come back in a second, and we're going to talk about some of the societal benefits of the CCC, the impact they had on the great outdoors. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford. AquaBio is a new twist on holding tank treatments. It offers today's RVers a formaldehyde and bronopal-free formula. Thetford's next generation of holding tank solutions is campground-friendly and complies with CALO's strict California regulations. The quick-acting holding tank treatment eliminates odors while digesting waste and toilet paper to prevent clogging. Nobody wants clogging in their RV toilet. It's not fun. I've only had to deal with that once. All without any harsh chemicals, and it's proudly made in the USA. Thetford's new AquaBio is formulated and tested safe for all RV and marine toilets, holding tanks, and septic systems. Comes in liquid, toss-in, and dry options. I'm a toss-in guy. Visit Thetford.com for more information. So welcome back to the show, Casita Dean May, and I'm excited to kind of keep talking about the CCC here. So let's go broad again. What were the overarching societal benefits of the CCC?
Okay, well, one of the first benefits is you just took millions of young men and gave them employment, in which the income from their efforts went back to their families. So right there, you know, in terms of stimulus, that is great stimulus of a depressed economy. And we'd also talked about how the United States was suffering from severe droughts in 1932 and 1933 with the Dust Bowl. And we are also, because of our farming practices and timber harvesting practice, we're having a lot of environmental problems as well, as far as like soil erosion. And so the CCC was able to have a number of projects associated with that. And we're talking about projects not just in one area of the country, but we're talking about natural resource and public land projects across the entire country. In fact, I looked at a map. I know this is, I mean, we're talking about these CCC camps. There were 4,500 CCC camps all across the United States. So this was a truly national project. And I mean, we're talking about also dealing with forestry and fire prevention. If you think about what's going on with the last several years with forest fires in the West Coast. So we have the CCC trying to prevent forest fires, you know, management of forestry, and doing actual forest firefighting from time to time. On the other hand, they would also help with flood control and again help with soil erosion. They would string communication and telephone lines.
All of these are transferable skills into people's careers. I mean, you did the research, not me, but I'm just imagining that these young men, you know, going into the CCC, and they're not just digging holes. I mean, they're building buildings and things like that, but these are also skills that could easily lead into careers in the post-World War II economy.
Right. So you're talking about 3 million young men that did. Now, get this. They planted 3 billion trees in addition to everything else they did. And I thought this was a fascinating statistic. Over half of the forest in the United States that were planted by human beings were planted by CCC workers. So they did dig a lot of holes and they planted a whole lot of trees. But the other thing that they did with a lot of these big, large scale projects, it required skilled labor and skilled professionals to help coordinate that. So during the Great Depression, now you're employing professional help and skilled labor to help with this. So then the CCC workers get to work alongside these folks, these skilled laborers and these professionals. So it was almost like an apprenticeship. So you're right. They were able to leave the CCC with a trade or something that they've learned.
So, Dean, was the CCC, you know, a bipartisan thing at that time? Was it broadly accepted? Were there people that didn't like it? I mean, I'm thinking today in terms of stimulus. I mean, I think most Americans want stimulus right now, but also they're writing checks today where this was so different. You know, they're sending people to work. So how was the CCC perceived at the time?
Oh, it was a very popular program. And in terms of our political parties, 92% of Democrats at the time favored the CCC and 67% of Republicans favor it. So it's not often we get, you know, particularly in this day and age, that we would see that type of bipartisan support.
Yeah. I mean, even if you take that lower number, that 67%.
Yeah. Two out of three.
Oh, my God. I mean, for any issue or any politician, they would love to have a 67% approval. So now let's talk about national and state parks and the CCC, because, you know, our listeners are RV owners and campers and people that love to get out into the great outdoors. What impact did they have on national and state parks?
Oh, and that's one of the reasons, you know, we've talked about this episode for maybe a couple of years at some point, wanting to do an episode on the CCC. Because, you know, again, with me teaching social work classes, you know, we'll talk about the New Deal and some of the different New Deal programs. So I knew about the CCC, but it wasn't until I became a camper that I started going out and hanging out at these state parks and Corps of Engineer parks and some national forest and places like that. And every place I would go to, I would see structures, buildings, signs about the CCC. So our national and state parks were forever touched by the works of the CCC.
And you're almost talking 100 years ago. I mean, you're approaching that mark. And I just think that, you know, people might have different opinions about a big government programs like that. But I just, anybody that's an RV owner or a camper or has tent camped with their kids, you've probably enjoyed a CCC built facility many, many times over without even realizing it.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, and I mean, they did so many things that, you know, even today we can't even imagine the things that they were doing in terms of erosion control and stream bank protection and revegetating landscapes and, you know, things like mosquito control and fire management. You don't see that today, even though those works were done. But the things that we can still see today is we can see the dams that they built, the bridges and the roads, 125,000 miles of bridges and roads in our state parks and national parks, 89,000 miles of telephone lines. And I've gone into some beautiful state parks in which the lodge was actually constructed by the CCC.
And they're beautiful, right? And it's like the craftsmanship is beautiful, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things that they did is they, depending on where you were in the United States and where the camp was located, they would match up the scenery of that particular state park. Maybe it's in the southwest compared to the southeast, compared to the northeast, or wherever the camp was or wherever the park was located. They would have architecture consistent with the scenery and the geography of the area.
And we have to say, a lot of these things, 90 years later, are probably in disrepair or at least in need of a freshening up. I mean, I'm sure it runs the gamut from things that are falling apart to things that just, you know, could use a fresh coat of paint. But, you know, I think that you and I both agree, like, it could be exciting to see something like this again to revitalize a lot of these things. So what other types of things did they do in our state and national parks?
Well, they did campgrounds, they did cabins, they did fire towers and recreation buildings and picnic shelters. And if you can imagine this, 13,000 miles of hiking trails and bridle trails. And then they even did their own historic, rather than making history, they did their part in repairing history. So they repaired historic structures, including old military forts that would make those forts more accessible to the general public. So, I mean, they literally transformed the infrastructure of the United States, particularly our state and national parks.
And big picture here, and I think this is why you had bipartisan support for this at the time. I think this is why you have bipartisan support for the Great American Outdoors Act, which, you know, passed through a you know, a House led by the Democrats, a Senate led by the Republicans, and then signed by a Republican president, you know, bipartisan support, right? That's how this came to be. I think that the big picture is that both Republicans and Democrats know that this is good for the economy, right? Because the outdoor economy is gigantic. And if you have really functioning national parks, state parks, roads, hiking trails, those are people going and spending their money and injecting that money directly into the economy. I mean, this is not a handout. This is an investment.
Right. And it's an investment that, like you said, nearly a century later, I'm still going in and camping at these places in which I can still see these beautiful parks and some of the structures that, you know, that they've constructed. But I do think you bring up a good point that we've got a tremendous deferred maintenance projects in our national and state parks that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and we'll come back in a second. We'll end by talking about that. But how did the CCC wind down in the early 1940s? Did it end rapidly, or did it sort of slowly dwindle away?
Well, I think that first and foremost, it was never meant to be a permanent program. It was meant to be a program to address a societal need that we had, you know, massive unemployment and natural resources that needed to be improved. So as we got through the 1930s, the employment rate started to decline, but that was accelerated as we got later and later into the 1930s. And into the 1940s with the prospect of the United States entering World War II. And then definitely with the bombing of Pearl Harbor on, you know, we all know on December 7th, 1941, at that point, a lot of CCC projects ceased with the plan of eliminating and winding down the CCC by 1943. But with the involvement of the war, they were able to go ahead and terminate the CCC by 1942. So a lot of these last workers that were in the CCC, and again, we're talking about 3 million young men, these men went from the CCC into either the European or Pacific corridor of World War II.
It's so interesting to think about the progression of the American decades and how you had these programs like these temporary programs like the CCC in the 30s that young men were so involved in learning skills. And then you go into World War II in the 40s, and they're also learning skills, learning a work ethic in an incredible way. And necessity is the mother of invention in terms of just all the skills a soldier would have learned. And then, you know, they come back in the late 40s and 50s, and it's they build the strongest American economy or the strongest a national economy that maybe any country has ever seen in the history of the world without the social programs in place, without all of those things happening. It was just that temporary injection coupled with the war that leads into the 50s and 60s, which were a period of incredible prosperity. I mean, to some degree, we are still living at the tail end of this period of prosperity, hopefully not the tail end.
No, definitely. Let's hope not. And it looks like maybe we do have, despite the challenges and things that we face today, you know, you've mentioned the Great American Outdoors Act. So that is, and it seems to have bipartisan support. It wouldn't have passed otherwise. So there are opportunities, even despite some of the challenges that we face.
So let's come back in a second, bring the conversation up to the present moment, talk about the Great American Outdoors Act again, because I really want to follow this story of the Great American Outdoors Act on the RV Atlas podcast. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco. The brand new JayFeather Micro Series is rugged and ready for adventure, but also lightweight and easy to tow. The 5 floor plans in the Micro Series are packed with high-end features like 16-inch Goodyear off-road tires, roof mount solar prep, and pre-wired for an inverter. You got to get the inverter if you're going to get solar. The included 17-inch Blackstone griddle is also a Jayco exclusive. The side Nerf bars and optional roof and bike racks make it easy to bring your bikes and kayaks along to the mountains, ocean, or the lake, wherever the open road leads you. The Micro Series has floor plans that are perfect for solo travelers, couples, or families that can't wait for their next great outdoor adventure. To find out more, visit jayco.com. Jayco, generations of family fun. Now, another thing, after World War II, everybody wanted to travel. Everybody wanted to see the country. And I know for me personally, once this virus is laid to rest, my impulse to travel all across this country is going to be really, really strong. I mean, we've been traveling locally and regionally. I cannot wait to be, heading out and seeing America in a really, really broad way. And we could be heading into a very exciting couple of decades. So, Dean, catch us up. Like, what's happening now with the backlog of maintenance projects and the Great American Outdoors Act?
You know, Laura and I didn't get involved into like RVing and camping until 2016, kind of as we were doing that transition to the empty nest. But and then at that point, I got so excited about the lifestyle that, you know, I did lots of reading and research and YouTube videos. And it was somewhat, you know, it was disenchanting to find out that our national and state parks, or just our national parks, are sitting on a backlog of $10 to $12 billion of deferred maintenance. So it's like, wow, you know, there's a lot of work that somehow needs to be done. Now, ironically, with the pandemic and stimulus packages and those types of things, and, you know, the Great American Outdoors Act, maybe with some of that funding, we could begin to talk about, you know, a new CCC, or at the very least, we can begin to address the deferred maintenance issues of our national parks.
And right now, I think the National Forest Service or the NPS has put out a public call to get opinions on what modernized campgrounds should look like. And I've been so busy, I haven't taken a look at the document. But you can go online, find this document, and actually submit your own public opinion about what campgrounds should look like and how they should be modernized. So look, this is going to happen. Money is going to get injected into these campgrounds with the Great American Outdoors Act. I mean, I find it incredibly, I'm giddy about this. I'm really excited about what's to come.
Oh, I agree. And the other thing that's interesting is that we're really not going to be using tax money to fund this. The funds for the Great American Outdoor Act is going to be generated from offshore oil leases and not necessarily taxes. And then we also had a land and water conservation fund that was set up in the 1960s and has never since the 1960s been fully funded, and in fact has had money taken from it to be used for other activities and other projects. But because of the Great American Outdoors Act, this may be the first opportunity, I'm going to put this in quote, to permanently fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund through the Great American Outdoors Act. But I don't know that anything is permanent these days. So, but still, there's some opportunities to do some things that we have not been able to do for decades.
I think that Americans of all political backgrounds love the great outdoors, love the American great outdoors. I just think it runs the gamut of people's political backgrounds in a way that's very unique. I think there's very few things you can point to where all Americans support or the majority of Americans support. And I think when you talk about our national parks, when you talk about our state parks, you talk about our shared public spaces, I just tend to think it doesn't really matter what your political background is. People in a broad sense do support them and want to see funding. I mean, we can argue about the nitty-gritty and the little details along the way, but in a broad sense, I think Americans want to see this money get injected into the great outdoors. So, Dean, do you think that it could be time for a new CCC? Is this a pie in the sky, or do you think it could actually happen?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely excited to see what's going to happen with the funding for the Great American Outdoors Act. One agenda item could be a new 21st century civilian conservation corps. Because again, like you'd mentioned earlier, there are comparisons between what's going on today and what was going on in the 1930s. We have large-scale unemployment. We have wildfires in the West. We've had lots of hurricanes. In fact, I'm teaching online these days at Western Kentucky University, but because of online teaching, I actually have a student in New Orleans that for the second hurricane can't complete parts of her assignments because of the hurricanes that are hitting Louisiana. So we have hurricane-stricken areas, and we have flood-prone areas around the Gulf, and we talked about the $10 to $12 billion in deferred maintenance. We have dams, we have bridges, we have infrastructure in disrepair. So we have kind of the same formula that we had in the 1930s. So I guess, you know, the question becomes, and of course, we're not going to have time to go into that today, and that's a topic for all of us to discuss, is, you know, what would a new CCC look like? And obviously, in the 21st century, as we were talking earlier, the CCC would look different than it did in the 1930s. But the CCC did amazing things in the 1930s, and it was a hallmark economic and youth employment program that transformed America and transformed particularly our national and state parks.
Now, we don't know what will happen with the, you know, revived or revitalized CCC, but we certainly know that the Great American Outdoors Act has been passed into law. And Dean, I hope that we can have you back in particular to kind of talk about that story as it develops and talk about how our campgrounds are going to change and be modernized. We value your opinion on these topics, and I get to let you do some of the research, and I just get to sit back and ask the questions. So will you promise to come back on again for another Great American Outdoors Act centered episode?
I like that idea.
Sounds good. All right, Dean, we'll see you at the revitalized state and national park campgrounds.
All right. Bye-bye.
A big thank you for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas.
And a big thank you to our sponsors, to Jayco, the Thetford Corporation, Go Power, Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, and RV Snappad.
To find out more about the topics discussed in this show, visit thervatlas.com.
And to join the friendliest group of RVers, join us over at the RV Atlas Group on Facebook.
See you at the campground.
We'll see you at the campground.